What's going on, everybody? Daryl Freda, the club CEO here, and we have another episode of the My DJ Story podcast brought to you by the Club app, the number one online community for DJs where you can stream for free and not get cut off. Today, we have my brother DJ Nook here to tell us his story. Can you please introduce yourself, tell the people where you're from and who you are?
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is DJ Nook from Rhode Island, representing Newport, Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island. You know, I got my start DJing in Boston. Shout out to 617 Productions and, you know, my cousin Keith Pierce. A lot of people in Boston that helped me out get my start. But, you know, definitely Rhode Island raised and here still rocking, hopefully sooner than later with all this craziness going on.
Awesome, brother. Thank you for the intro and super excited to hear your journey within the DJ industry, man. Tell us a little bit about the beginning days. You know, what sparked your interest to become a DJ and just a little bit about how you got started and walk us from there.
Yeah, I mean, since I was can remember, you know, a little kid, I always was very passionate about music and I always wanted, you know, I always was setting up my speakers all crazy and making, you know, just mixtapes off the radio, just like pause and catching songs. And I'd say 90.3, which is University of Rhode Island's radio station that I'm actually now currently the program director for the hip hop department, was the hugest influence on anyone from this area, music wise. They have DJs for every genre, you know, reggae and hip hop and rock, everything. And the DJs really hearing them every week, you know, even things that I didn't like and things that I liked, it got me going. And I was like, I need to be a part of this. And in high school, my friends, I was helping make hip hop. You know, we were always coming to my house and recording and making beats. And that was another thing too, where I really wanted to be a part. I didn't rap. I was like, where is my place in this? Besides just finding the samples or whatever, I wanted more. So DJing was kind of the natural. Once I got to college, you know, I had my roommate had turntables and I ended up buying all of his stuff by the end of that year. You know, I stopped going to school and just kept DJing more. And then I was at Johnson & Wales at the time, you know, and then once I got my first turntables and everything, I moved to Boston and started to go to school for sound engineering at MassCom, which is now New England Art Institute. And my cousin was a bartender. I wasn't old enough to get into the bars like without getting him in trouble, really. So he was like, you know, if you want to hang out, you gotta just play your records, you know, just come DJ. And that's I didn't have a DJ name. He's like, you gotta put a name on the flyer, you know. He came up with my DJ name, and that was it, man. I was working at Tower Records, and I had one of my best friends I met at work there was DJ Sender, and it was ended up I lived with him for 9 years. Like right when we met, we were like brothers, and he was really good at scratching, you know, and I was more mixing, and we helped each other really evolve to strengthen, you know. He made me better at scratching, I made him better at mixing, and then you know, 617 Productions, Ace and Frankie and those guys gave us our first start, like gave us gigs on Lansdowne Street and all over Boston, just started throwing us in the fire, really. Like back when, before Serato, you know, this is like 2000, and whatever records you brought to the club was like, you had to hope you brought the right crate because like people weren't playing games, you know. They came to hear what they, you know, this, the energy had to be there. So that was a big wake-up call from doing like my cousin's little bar gigs to hitting the clubs and being like, wow, you know. I didn't really respect, I'd say, commercial music as much until feeling the burn, you know, the girls and the people, like, you gotta turn it up right now, you know, like that shit's not gonna fly. So I was like, that was a big wake-up call where I really learn the value of commercial music. Whereas before I was battling it. I was like, we wanted the underground sound coming up. But then I saw like, this is another level of DJing that I didn't know about. And then I wanted more of it. You know, the more I got of it, the more I learned, the more records we started to get. And then, you know, I was addicted. I had to do as many gigs as possible after that.
Wow, that's a super dope intro, man. And I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head talking about how you have to adjust to the audience. And, you know, it's not about you. It's not about, you know, what you want to play.
At all.
But it's really about how do you, you know, really create a dope environment for the audience you're playing for. So I think that's super awesome that you learned that early and you were able to adjust and pivot and really make adjustments to the way that you approach your DJ sets. And that's, you know, a part of the trade. That's a part of the learning process. You know, when you get that feedback from your audience and you're able to learn from it, and I'm glad you did. So, you know, tell me, you know, where did you go from there? You know, you got that really huge experience of learning how to, you know, build for your crowd to the next level. You know, where did you go from there with your career?
So from there, even beyond the music, I think then I started to understand it was about the equipment too. And a lot of these places had their setup and that's what you had to use. And that opened me up to the technology. And then Serato came, you know, and like the digital, like being able to not have to have all your boys and six crates of records with you everywhere you go. You had like, now you just brought your computer. So that opened up me to be able to travel a lot more and do weirder gigs or even higher paying gigs. You know, I really started to do more weddings after that. Like, I was intimidated to do weddings, I'd say, because I liked the clubs and all that. And I was comfortable that the records I had and everything was good for that. And weddings were a little more formal, but then we kind of hit the curve where people started saying, I want my wedding to be like a club. I don't want a wedding DJ that's just like cheesy on the mic and doing games all night. We want that club energy. So that really opened the door for me to start doing weddings and expand my business, because I didn't want to just shut down all the nightclub gigs and all the night I'd spent at this, you know, year, over a decade building these connections, and it was going well. So I added more people. I would brought as many people that anytime I met somebody that was interested in DJing, I always helped them to learn and taught a lot of people the ropes, you know, and like how to use the equipment, and just use my experience to help them, you know, speed up the process and get like, I can get you ready to do this gig. Come with me for a few weeks until you, you know, get the training wheels off and kind of set up residencies that lasted, instead of just like months or years, even like ones that have lasted decades and longer, you know, where if I'm not there, I can still send, they know, like I sent somebody that's going to get the job done. And it's like you said, it's not so much about putting DJ Nook or the name in front. It is more about just like knowing the music is always going to be good at that particular spot, and like people knew the girls are going to be there, the bartenders have good drinks or whatever, you know, they come and the music made turn the gears of the whole operation. So I tried to, you know, over the years just get as many of those and keep them and put as many, you know, up and coming people on as I could and kind of extend the mission as long as I can, you know?
Yeah, I like how you spoke about, you know, the integral role that DJs play in the nightlife industry. And, you know, it's a business, and DJs play a significant role where, you know, the DJ sets the vibe, they set the tone, they really control a lot of the energy and the potential for these businesses to make money. And I think that it's really dope for DJs to really understand the role that they play in the whole economy of the party business. And I think that you hit the nail on the head by, it's not really about you being on the fly. It's about, you know, how can you just ensure that the business relationship lasts long, and making sure that that establishment has a good brand of, hey, they play good music and you're the head DJ that typically plays there. But even if you're not there, you've built that relationship where you can put someone there in your place to keep the vibe going. So I think that you are really doing the right things and setting an example for other DJs to learn how to build relationships in this business, because DJing is cool. It's a hobby, but for those that really want to make money from it, you got to know the business practices as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's like, you know, it's the type of thing that, you know, when you do it right, like, it's almost being like a puppet master. Like, you have the whole room in the palm of your hand. You know, sometimes they're dancing too much and you know you gotta break up the dance for a little so they'll go get a drink but not leave the place. And like, you really gotta be sensitive and like look at your selections like that more than just like what beat per minute is this song or whatever. Like, it's like you gotta look at the whole room. Like, you can see that the manager's getting nervous because there's nobody at the bartenders are all on their phones and everybody's on the dance floor like, oh, I love this song. And you're like, all right, let me get these people to buy drinks, because at the end of the day, if the venue doesn't profit and you just made everybody say your name all night, that might be good for like the short time, but they're probably like, it's not, the business won't last one way or another. Something's going to have to go. And you gotta, the more money that's in the drawers at the end of the night, the better everybody, because those bartenders need to eat everybody. You know, they'll say, I love working when DJ Nook's on because I make a ton of money, you know? And like, it's because you're not being selfish and keeping them.
Wow. I love what you're saying right now, because you are speaking as a true team player, and it's not just all about you. It's about the whole team, and you include everyone in the team, from the owners to the bartenders to the DJ and extended DJs in your network. And like, you,
security, even like, you can control, you can tell if there's going to be a fight and you know, like, oh, this is probably not a good time to play Guns N' Roses, like, or people, someone's going to get smashed in the face. Like, you can tell. And at the end of the night, you can smooth it out with some like slow jams that you know who's going to punch somebody if this song is on. Like, you know, like, I never really seen somebody get punched while like a Marvin Gaye song was on at the end of the night. You know what I mean? So it's like, you can help a lot of people by just being smart about certain situations like that, and looking at it like that, instead of like, you got the drunk person with their phone like, yo, play DMX right now. And you could tell there's friction already out there. And you're like, it might not be the time for that, you know, like, and you have to spread it out, you know?
I love the way you think about it, man. Speaking as a true business person and professional and someone that knows the craft of DJing intentionally. So thank you for what you're doing and dropping those gems for other DJs out there that may not think that way at the time. So now you're kind of putting that in your head. How can I use the fact that I can control the space to help everyone, help the people at the party and help the people that are help running the party, and being, making everyone sure that everyone's goals are being met. You know, the bartenders, the security, the owners, they want to make money. That's what they're there for. And the people, they want to have a good time. So how do you make sure that you are the one that are adding to the experiences of all the people involved? And I love the way,
you know, you make people fall in love, and then there's more wedding bookings for the DJs too. They're like, I want you to DJ my wedding. We fell in love when you played that Marvin Gaye song that night, you know, but it could have been the night, like, there was a fight and somebody went to the hospital. It could have gone, like, people's paths of their lives change just off of them songs sometimes, you know? So it's crazy.
Wow, man. No, that's super good insight, brother. I would love to hear, you know, what are some things that kind of got you to understand the psychology of the business of DJing? Because you definitely understand it at a deeper level than most DJs. So walk me through how you got there and what advice can you give to other DJs so they can get there as well?
I think it basically came because my passion was always I just love to play music loud for people since I was a little kid. That's what all I want to do is just play my records. Like, I want to, you know, I got records, man. I want to put them on and I want to turn it up. And to be able to turn that into a respectable business that my family could like survive on, and I could support my family or whatever, I knew I had to take it serious and make it, you know, more than that. And I had to find a way to make it a profitable thing. And I was always, one of my best friends started bartending around the same time I started DJing, and we always kind of mirrored each other's success, where he was a pioneer in like the mixology game kind of, and these like super intense cocktail contests and all that. And you know, we saw ways to make it creative instead of just like getting through your shift. And I cared about the people I worked with, and I, you know, I knew how much they were bringing in. It was once I started knowing like the difference of a bar, where the bartenders can make $600 a night, or they're going home like with like $80 or something, you know, is a big difference. So I started to really see the science of it and what was needed to make it a profitable business for something that's going to last, you know, because a lot of clubs and a lot of night, like restaurants and just nightlife spots, especially in like bigger places like LA and New York, those places are lucky to last like a couple seasons, you know, like you don't usually see them last more than a few years, whatever. But where I'm from, like in Newport and even in Boston, it's different. These places are there for like since the 1800s, and they don't touch them. They're like, it's that colonial. So I think growing up in Newport and seeing how people preserve things, I wanted to preserve this DJ thing the same way and like keep the quality, you know, preserved and the accounts there so that people will be able to, even if it's not me, like it's still a thing. Like it's not just all cover bands everywhere you go. Like I respect them too, but there was no DJs really in Newport before. There was like two guys, and they were like, they weren't, you know, like really DJing like at that level, you know, of like every type of music or whatever, and just actually spinning as a business instead of just more of a popularity thing. So that's really the thing, is just like most DJs are doing it for like Instagram clout or quick little, like while they're in college, it's a cool way to party. It's fun. It's quick little money. But their heart's not in it. They usually have day jobs or something else going on, or, you know, like I only DJed since then, you know, I never stopped or made money off of renting equipment, found other ways, lighting and other things that you can up your game and make business moves with, but are still like from that culture, you know?
Yeah, man, I definitely think that that's a good insight that you shared. And talk to me about, you know, how do you think DJs can go about having longevity in their, you know, career and making it something that you know, like you said, provides a true income for their family so they can be a full-time DJ. How do DJs go about creating that, you know, opportunity for themselves?
Stay away from the cocaine. And because that really is a thing. You know, there's a lot of temptations when you're in that nightlife. There's a lot of people that are out there with a lot of things in their pockets that will come up to the DJ booth like, yo, here, whatever, you know, you're killing it. Take this. And you got to know when to say no, because you got to know the nightlife will eat you alive, man. A lot of people are dead, you know, like people that I cared about a lot. And because of it, like just like partying with the bartenders and not going home, you know, and doing it is fun, you know. But if you look at it like your longevity, how many nights can you really do it and keep up with yourself and be able to perform at a high level and handle all the, I think a good movie to watch that I always tell everyone that I've ever like taught DJ and stuff to or put on with like gigs is It's All Gone, Pete Tong. And it's like the realest thing about DJing, I think. And it shows a guy who was like you know, it's like you're at the top of you're the biggest, and the guy was losing his hearing because of the gigs were so loud every night. Like, you got to protect, and his partying. The doctor told him if he keeps partying like this and everything, he's going to lose his hearing. And you kind of see him go from the top to the bottom. Like, things like, look what happened with DJ AM and Spin Bad and a lot of people, you know, where it's like, it's there's a lot of pills and drugs out, just quick access to things. So you got to really know what you're here for and know what time it is, and know when it's time to have fun and when it's time to handle your business and when it's time to just get the hell out of Dodge before, you know, before the temptations are too much to, you know. That's, I'd say, the realest thing, because the best DJs that I know, that's, you know, what sucked the life out of their career eventually, or made it so they can't handle going out anymore, you know? So you gotta keep it in the pocket with that and focus on the music and doing the best you can do. And your last, like, no gig is worth anything except for your next gig you got coming up, you know? Like, you could be doing something real big, but you don't wanna let it get to your head too much, because you gotta keep those next gigs coming in. And there's a lot of people that, you know, will take advantage of you if you're not on point with your stuff. Get an agent, I'd say, is probably a good thing too. I always did my own bookings, and I did good with it, and I've been an agent for other people and stuff, but I think in this day and age, it's a good way to kind of protect your interests and have somebody that can handle the business for you, so you can be cool and go around and do your thing, and but your business is handled, and that gives you a little bit of a buffer zone with that stuff, so you're not too much, because you have to associate with people too and get in the mix to make waves and like get where you want to be too. You don't want to be like, I only came here to DJ, and you're like a dick to everybody. That's not good either.
Yeah, no, that's some really great advice, man. And thank you for everything you shared. I've gotten a lot of value out of this call, and I'm sure our audience has gotten a lot of value listening to you as well. I'd love to hear some of the things that you're working on today and some of the things that we can see from you in the future.
Yeah, so today is actually an interesting day because I'm DJing tonight. And I haven't gotten to say that in a really long time. But I'm spinning at Troop in Providence tonight, which is a little hip-hop spot on Valley Street in Providence, Rhode Island. And it's like a hip-hop themed restaurant bar. And we're doing a thing tonight called Locals Only, which is basically branched off of a segment that we do on the radio. I do 90.3 WRIU Kingston, the hip-hop show from 3 to 6 every Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. 3-hour show. And on Mondays, we have my host, we just do all local music, and we give shine to all the local independent artists, you know, and we stretch it out more than just like Rhode Island. Like, we go pretty far with that, but it's basically just like up and coming people who, you know, this is a chance, we play all their music. And now this is a night that we're going to do it as well at Troop with the they have their playlist is all local music, and then I'm DJing from 7 to around midnight, just playing, you know, and like local independent stuff, which is cool too for around here, because like I said earlier, I've been involved with the hip hop scene since I was like 15 and doing shows. And there's a lot of Rhode Island's the smallest state, but there's a lot of big talent that people have done huge things and that are working in the industry doing. So it's going to be cool tonight to kind of take people on a ride through the early hip hop scene to where these people are at now, and the evolution of like the sound of it, and guys that went from being like open mic night rappers to some of the biggest producers, like people that work with like Dr. Dre and big producers in the game right now. So it's going to be cool. It's kind of, normally a whole night of spinning local music would kind of bum me out, to be honest with you. But Like at a bar, especially, like I want to, like, haven't played in the club or anything in so long. I want to play. I actually want to play that stuff now because it's been, I'm not burnt out on it, you know? So tonight will be tough for me to hold back my like commercial vibes, but we're gonna take a ride through this Rhode Island stuff and kind of pay homage to a lot of people that was the true reason I became a DJ, you know, was just to be involved with the hip hop scene and not have to pay for stuff and drink for free. And, you know, originally that I was that person, and I learned what it really, you know, it's been crazy. You know, I've gotten to work with a lot of really big artists and tour with like my favorite rappers and crazy stuff. So all just through sticking to my passion and believing that someone would pay attention at some point, you know, and it worked. Like anybody.
Beautiful, man. It, you know? Yeah, you had faith and you stuck through it and you were able to persevere through any obstacles. And here you are today, man. Super proud of you and really happy that we were able to share your story on the podcast. At this time, we're going to jump right into the lightning round. Are you ready?
Sure.
Awesome. Describe your DJ setup, hardware and software.
I have a lot, but my favorite is the Pioneer S9 and Technique 1200s. But I have all my mixers that I've ever had, and I have over 15 turntables. But I'm all about Technique 1200s. And CDJs are cool if it's hot out, because I don't want my records broken.
Besides yourself, who's your favorite DJ?
Ooh. My man DJ Hoff is definitely one of my biggest influences out of Baltimore. He's in California now, for sure. And Mixmaster Mike and Q-Bert, of course, and like the Executioners.
What has been your favorite party or event you've DJed at and why?
I got to do Kendrick Lamar double sold out show at Lupo's in Providence, Rhode Island. And it was just the energy, man. I couldn't believe it. How I'd never seen that much energy at a hip hop show. Like, and I've seen a lot, you know, I've DJed for KRS-One, a lot of people, but that Kendrick night was like, it was serious. He double sold out the same night, so we had to do the same show twice, and it wasn't even planned that way. It was only one, but they sold the tickets so fast. They were like, we're gonna do a late set and an early set. They double sold out, and it was just his energy, and seeing that, it gave me faith for the future of hip hop, seeing that many people that like something that good. I was like, yes.
Who's the most interesting person you've met through DJing?
Probably I'd have to say Cool Keith, from Ultra Magnetic MCs, Dr. Octagon, Cool Keith. If you know, you know, man. He's he's definitely like on another level, on a different wavelength. But yet, one that I understand very clearly.
What is one thing that you think is missing from live streaming for DJs?
I think it kind of takes the wind out of some DJs' sails, because it's like, it's not, you can't hide behind the music so much. Unless you get somebody else like really programming the screen good, I guess you can, but like, you got to really have a good screen presence and or be comfortable on the camera, and you got to have like your set right, like what it looks like. There's just a lot more elements to it, where as opposed to normally, you know, people looking at you in the beginning of the night when it's all bright, then the lights go down, everybody has a few drinks, and nobody's looking at the DJ. You just kind of, so you, this camera being on you thing is like I think it kind of takes the wind out of the sails of maybe the music, because people are focusing more on their visuals as opposed to like what their actual musical performance is going to be like.
And shout out any DJs you know personally whose story should be shared on this podcast.
I definitely want to shout out my boy DJ Kareem. He's he's somebody that he was a bar back at a gig that I was spinning at just like a dive bar, and he heard my set. It was a dead night where nobody was there. He's like, he heard my set and he was like, man, this is what I want to do. This was crazy what you did. And now he's one of the best DJs I know, and he's got a lot of crazy stories. My man DJ Screwloose, also out of Rhode Island, is they both work for a headphone disco company also, so they do a lot of those silent disco parties where they travel around to all the different colleges and like to go visit military bases and all types of crazy stuff. So they've done some really cool things, and they're guys that were always really reliable, that kind of the guys I passed the torch to for a lot of things, and you know, they teach me stuff all the time.
Wonderful, man, and looking forward to hearing their stories. And any DJs that are interested in being on the show, they can sign up at djsignup.com. And brother, where can people find you online or even in person if you're still doing events?
Yes, I got the real DJ Nook on Instagram. It's DAREAL DJ NOOK on Instagram. And I got the DJ Nook band page for Facebook. And I usually am pretty good about posting stuff up when I do it. I'm at Gurney's in Newport Poolside, hopefully this summer, back to my residency if we can keep this corona thing in the pocket, you know? I think these next couple weeks are really going to show us like what the summer is going to be like. So I want everyone to get the vaccine so that we can get back to like people licking each other to Whitney Houston on the dance floor. Like,
hey brother, this was a really great interview, man. I got a lot of value out of it. I know everyone else listening got a lot of value out of it as well. So everyone check out DJ Nook. He's doing some great things, and we appreciate you being on the My DJ Story podcast, brother. Thank you.
Yes, listen to the radio. It's 290.3 WRIU Kingston.
Are you a DJ? Well, we want to hire you as one of our official The Club virtual DJs. We've been working hard to source hundreds of paid virtual gigs, and we need DJs of all kinds that are interested in getting paid to curate virtual events for our clients. Whether you're a new DJ just getting started or a veteran in the game, we have paid gig opportunities for you. Text I'm in to 609-201-1027 to get notified for paid gig opportunities from The Club. Tell a friend. We look forward to working with you. Now back to the podcast.